excited to welcome you to Real Woman, Real Torah, a project of Becheva Learning Center. We're here to offer you an authentic Torah learning experience, produced for woman, by woman. I hope you enjoy. Thank you so much to Rivka Lazarus for sponsoring today's episode in honor of a Refuah Shlema for Velvel Shlomo HaKohen Bas Vega Gittel. We are so grateful for your support. May he have a complete recovery. I am excited to welcome Rabbi Dr. Tali Lowenthal. He is a professor of Jewish studies at University College London and the director of the Chabad Research Unit. He is a scholar who has written two books on the topics of Hasidic philosophy and history, and his research specializes specifically in the history of Hasidic women, which is exactly what we want to talk about today. So I'm excited to hear your insights and your expertise on this topic. I want to start off today by talking a little bit about the history of girls' education amongst the Hasidic community. So my first encounter with this whole concept of educating girls being a part of the tradition amongst Hasidim going all the way back hundreds of years was from the Friedrich Rebbe's memoirs. In the Friedrich Rebbe's memoirs, he talks about, you know, even prior to the Hasidic movement, you know, in the time period when the Kabbalists were sort of the precursor to the Hasidic movement, they already had this tradition to educate their daughters. We have the story of Rachel and Devorah Leah, which are the grandmother and aunt of the Alter Rebbe. Devorah Leah sees her mother, Rachel, learning Gemara when her father leaves the house, and she gets very upset by that because she wishes that she had the same education that her mother had. And she and her mother end up discussing it, and her mother tells her that this is always a tradition amongst the Kabbalists to educate their daughters. And I'm curious to know if this is really true, that this was always a tradition for hundreds of years of, you know, amongst the tradition of the Kabbalists to educate their daughters. Do we have any other accounts, any other historical records of that tradition happening? And if we do, like, how did this happen practically? There obviously was informal schooling going on for girls at that time. So how was this tradition practically implemented in the communities of the Kabbalists and later the Hasidim? And lastly, I'm curious to know, how does this tradition fit in with the general philosophy of the Kabbalists as opposed to the philosophy of their opponents?
Okay, well, that's a very interesting point, question. You see, in the Friedrich Rebbe's memoirs, we also have much earlier Perel, who was the wife of the Maharal of Prague. And the very interesting account that he gives about how when they got engaged, he gave her a syllabus that she should learn in preparation for marriage. And then presumably she learned through the syllabus and she became a kind of secretary to him. And it said, I think it's in eight places, she spotted he'd made a mistake with a reference or something like that. And she managed to spot this. So that we have now, the Maharal was a Kabbalist. And the extent to which this happened in other families, I haven't seen any actual evidence, but what I could suggest is that the focus that the Kabbalah gives to the concept of the Shekhinah, as it were, the feminine aspect of the divine, and there's the 10 Sfirot, and the Shekhinah is tremendously significant, and the whole idea of the union of the Sfirot with the Shekhinah and the exalted quality of the Shekhinah. So in sort of theoretical terms, the woman is being put on a very high pedestal. If we see the Shekhinah as the spiritual source of human women. So that means the woman is being put on a very high pedestal. And and it's a question among academic scholars, you know, how did this translate into practical reality? And there aren't many clues. So there's very, very little information about this. The thing about the Kabbalists, the Mekubalim, they're very reticent usually about their own private life. And so when we're speaking, you know, so in that period of the Kabbalists, that's so those, you know, so basically there's that one incident of which we know he wrote it in his diary, and it's there. And the other thing is the very fact that the Kabbalists exalt the Shekhinah, the tenth sphira, Malchut, and the whole idea of seeing husband and wife as the sfirot flowing into Malchut, and that connection, you know, makes one see that certainly womanhood is something very special for the Kabbalists. So how that translates into study of Torah, of course, we have in the Talmud as well, we have people who were famous, women who were famous for their knowledge of Torah, whether it's Bruria, Yalta, various other people. But how it's, you know, the exact practicalities are not, you know, the evidence isn't there. But the fact that the evidence isn't there doesn't tell us that it didn't happen. And the greatest piece of evidence is the fact that this is what the Friedrich Rebbe wrote about with his great concern for understanding the history of the Jewish people, the history of Chabad, the history of Kabbalah, and seeing how it all fits together. So the fact that he writes about it, that's a very meaningful statement.
Right, and I assume also just in general, the lives of women in those days, we don't know much about, like, this, you know, in general. So I guess it's not surprising that we wouldn't have information about their Torah study either.
Well, I mean, there is one woman that we do know quite a lot about. That's Glickel of Hamelin, who lived in the 17th century. And she wrote an autobiography in Yiddish. And she was a very scholarly woman. It's quite clear she read the kind of book that were written for women. There were books in Yiddish written for women, like Brandspiegel, The Burnished Mirror, and various others, which they tend to be ethical books. But she also seems to have known the Gemara Chelek, the Perek in Sanhedrin, which begins, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lem Chelek Lo'olam Haba. And it's full of all kinds of interesting agadata, things about Moshiach. And she quotes that in her book, you know, seeming that she read it and understood it. And she was able to write about it. Now, she does not come over in the book as a very, very unusually learned woman. What is remarkable about her is the fact that she wrote her autobiography, and the autobiography survived. But she's not writing as if, you know, I'm an exceptional person. I always wanted to learn and to read, and I was very different to everyone else. She comes over as she sees herself as a standard woman and doing the things that other women did. She does business and so on. But she is a very learned person. So, you know, given that there is that example of a type of woman, you know, there was some concept of women's education. And also, there were a considerable number of books which had been printed for women with sort of ethical teachings or books with a Hebrew text and a Yiddish translation. On the same page, like Kava Yashar, which was a book which again had ethical teachings. There was a book of Halacha that was very popular. which was written in Yiddish, and very likely women who were that bit more learned would be studying that as well.
So I guess what's the crux of the, I guess, philosophical debate? Because it definitely seems from the Friedrich Rebbe's account in the memoirs that there was clearly, you know, Rachel is hiding her learning from her husband, and her daughter doesn't even know how to read, right? So, like, there's no education going on whatsoever, and, like, Rachel has to hide, you know, her learning. So clearly there was a very strong shita of, like, this should not be accessible to women at all. And I guess, are they interpreting the original Gemara differently? Like, I guess, like, what's, like, the core of their debate about...
Well, there in the original Gemara, we have in Soita, we have two opinions. Rabbi Eliezer says a man should teach his daughter Torah. And then the other opinions are not to teach the daughter Torah. You know, so it seems that, you know, the Rambam quotes the opinion of not teaching one's daughter Torah. But there certainly is a view that one should teach one's daughter Torah. And in the case of Ruria, for example, the wife of Rabbi Meir, she certainly did seem to know a lot of oral Torah. That's quite apart from a knowledge of Nach. You see, the argument about, you know, not teaching one's daughter Torah, it seems to be resolved that that is about Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebaksav, a woman is allowed to read. And so the argument's about Torah Shebal Peh. But then comes various, critiques of this. For example, you see, the reason given in the Talmud is that they will misunderstand it, or they, I mean, one of the ways that I try to explain this is, it says in the Gemara that a person, in order to be a good Talmudist, a man, in order to be a good Talmudist, has to be able to prove in 150 ways that a sheretz is pure. Now, a sheretz is not pure. A sheretz makes a person tummy. But you have to be able to prove in 150 different ways that it is pure in order to be a good Talmudist. So that means you have to be able to prove that black is white. Now, that's not seen as a feminine quality. The feminine quality is sincerity, MS, clarity, and so that's why they say, you know, it'll introduce into women a mumius, cunning. Once you've got the ability to prove that a sheretz is pure, so you can prove anything, you know, why this, why that, everything can be turned upside down. So the question is, how do the men use this ability? And that's one of the problems of Talmudic study by itself. Which one can see the Haskalah movement, partly beginning in Eastern Europe, out of Talmudists, who their minds were very free-roaming, and with all the skills that the Talmud had given them, and they were able to argue themselves out of Yiddishkeit, or out of observance of Yiddishkeit. You can always bring a proof that this and that and the other. So that's the need for Hasidus on the one hand, and the Misnagdim, who didn't accept that people should learn Hasidus, it was too high, they began the Musa movement a century later, in the middle of the 19th century, because they saw that just Talmudic study does not necessarily make a person a frum person. So in other words, there's the same critique about men as about the possibility of women studying Gemara and coming to this cunning, this negative quality as a result. But the fact that the Friedrich Rebbe is transmitting this. Now, it occurs to me now, another source about women studying Torah is in the Kabbalistic side of Jewish literature. is in Sefer Hasidim. Now, Sefer Hasidim was a book compiled by or around the figure of Yehuda Chassid, who is one of the Tosafists living in Ashkenaz, that means North France and Germany, and the circle of the Tosafists. He's mentioned in Tosafos and in the Gemara. And there is this fascinating book centering around the Chacham. The Chacham is like the Rebbe, the sage. And he's a mystic figure. He's a person who's able to interpret people's dreams and other spiritual qualities. So suddenly in Sefer Hasidim, it presents the importance of women studying Torah. And it gives examples. For example, one of the points is that Elisha gave a bracha to the Shunammite woman that she should have a baby. And she had a little boy, and he was a few years old, and then in the hot sun, he fainted or he died. He got sunstroke, and she is very upset. She goes to her husband. She says, "I'm going to see the Navi, Elisha." So her husband says to her, "Why are you going? It's not Rosh Chodesh, and it's not Shabbos." So what Sefer Hasidim says, that shows that women would go to the Navi on Rosh Chodesh and Shabbos. And there they would hear Torah. He would be giving a favrengen, and they would hear the sichas, the maimah.
Wow, interesting. That's very interesting.
So that's then Sefer Hasidim. Now, to be honest, it goes on to say that she shouldn't study the mystical dimension, shouldn't study Kabbalah. But it does approve her studying Torah, particularly, and this actually became the halacha, that she should study that which applies to her. Now, so then, once you've got the idea that a woman should study the Torah which applies to her, then you've got a very interesting situation. So in the big Shulchan Aruch, I think it's the Ramah, in his commentary on what Rav Yosef Karo says, he said, but she should be allowed to study what applies to her. And he just says it like in 1.5 lines. But as well known, just reaching for a sefer here, here's the Alter Rebbe's Hilchos Talmud Torah. So there, in a very famous passage, the end of the first Perek, he gives a long... It's more than a page long, where he goes through and he goes on to the next page. It's well, he goes into the whole discussion, what it says in the Gemara, in Kedushin, it says a woman isn't included in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and then what it says in Soita, and then he quotes things, further things from the Rambam. And then he goes on to say, however, women too are chayv to learn the halachas that apply to them. And he gives a whole list. Now, that's the first time someone gave a list exactly what it is. And he goes through a list. And famously, the Rebbe said about this, that if a man knew everything on this list, he'd be considered a Talmud Chacham. So there is this list. Then, I think it was 1954, the head of Chabad or the head of the Beis Rivka in Yer, wrote to the Rebbe asking about girls studying Tanya. Should the more senior girls study Tanya? So we're jumping historically because in between comes the Achres HaTmimim that I hope we'll speak about in a moment, in the 1930s. But I'm just trying to give the halachic basis. So the Rebbe said, in terms of Maaseh Rav, in terms of this having been done, the Friedrich Rebbe did it, there was Achres HaTmimim, and so it's fine. But in fact, it's not only something that the Friedrich Rebbe did, it's a halachic issue. And the halachic issue is that a woman is supposed to study the laws which affect her keeping of halacha. Now, so that means a woman has to study Hilchos Shabbos in order to keep Shabbos properly. Now, then there are six mitzvahs to medios, which are listed in Sefer HaChinuch. And those mitzvahs are things like to know the unity of Hashem, and love of Hashem, and Yiras Hashem, and not to go astray after our hearts and our eyes. That these are mitzvahs that are continually applying to every man and woman all the time. And the Rebbe says, in order to keep those mitzvahs properly, you need to study Hasidus. So certainly the woman should study Hasidus in order to be able to keep those mitzvahs properly. So there he's giving a halachic basis to, if you like, to those stories that we have in the memoirs and things like that, is a clear halachic basis. And it's interesting that the beginning of the halachic basis for women studying Torah is in a Kabbalistic source, is in the Sefer Hasidim, which is a book of German pietism, Hasidic Ashkenaz, the mystics and the Kabbalists of Ashkenaz, as opposed to the mystics and Kabbalists of Sfarad. That's
mm-hmm. Right. So I feel like the study of Tanya is, I think that that's less revolutionary in the sense that it's very clearly directly relevant to a woman's life, and it seems like that's, common amongst the Pesachim to say that women should study texts that are directly applicable. But what's interesting is that in the memoirs, it also describes, Rachel studying Gemara, right? Which we assume is not, this is a theoretical study, which seems like an even more revolutionary, statement that the Kabbalists were approving of women just studying Gemara. But that's, especially so far back. Do we have any, source or discussion of, where that, where they got the basis to permit that?
That's, I don't know of any indicators about that, except that the way the Arizal learned Gemara, he was actually the nephew, I think, of the person who wrote the Shita Mekubetzes, which looks at the different Shitas in the Gemara. So the Arizal would learn according to each Shita, and then he would learn according to the Kabbalistic dimension. So there's like a Kabbalistic perspective on the Gemara. Now, when these daughters of Kabbalists were studying Gemara, which way were they studying? Was it the simple way that they were studying? Were they looking at the Kabbalistic point of view? The Arizal went on. Reb Chaim Vital collected from the Arizal a lot of teachings about the Gemara, which he put in one of the Shmona Sharim, one of the eight gates, which transmit the Kabbalah of the Arizal. And so one of them is all comments on the Gemara. And we know from the Rebbe's father, Reb Levi Yitzchok, any piece of Gemara that he touched in his explanations, immediately reveals a completely different dimension. So when we have the daughters of Kabbalists, studying Gemara, exactly which way were they learning? That's remains a question.
Then
of course you have the Rebbe's own encouragement of girls and women to learn Gemara. You see, outside Chabad, around 1919, the Chofetz Chaim wrote a pirush. He wrote books on Lashon Hara, which are very famous today. He wrote Mishnah Brura, which is a famous halachic discussion of Orach Chaim, the first section of the Shulchan Aruch. And he wrote a few commentaries on Masechtas of Gemara. And he wrote one on Sota. So when he comes to that page of Sota, page 21, which talks about women shouldn't study Gemara and things like that, or the way the positive aspect of women in their relationship to Torah, not by actually learning it, but by accepting that their husband, encouraging their husbands, and accepting their husbands are going to learn Torah and waiting up for them. So he writes, this idea about women not studying Torah, in our time, women have to study Torah. He wasn't saying that they should study Gemara. He was saying they should study ethical writings such as Menorahs HaMa'or and things like that, which bring ethical teachings. And he says in our time, a woman, basically what he's saying, a woman has to be armed in order to face all the challenges that there are, the challenge of secularization of the art scholar, everything else that was happening. And so he strongly advised that women should study Torah. And of course, he was writing that after the Beis Yaakov movement had already begun, and shortly after, because it began in 1917 in full force. And you know, that's the basis of many institutions like Gateshead Seminary, teaching girls fairly extensively, but not learning Gemara. That's still not learning Gemara. Right. But then you have our Rebbe encouraging girls to learn Gemara, certainly the Ein Yaakov. There was a young girl, I think she was 14 or so, 15 maybe, who came from London and had yechidus with the Rebbe. And the Rebbe said to her, do you learn Mishnah in yechidus? So I'm not quite sure what she answered. And anyway, when she got back, a big Talmud Chacham, Beryl Levin, Oliver Shalom, was brought in to teach the girls the depth of Mishnayos. They learned Bava Kama, like in a very deep way, with Rebera Levine. It was a remarkable thing.
Interesting. Very interesting. So we know that, you know, in the memoirs it describes women of the Alter Rebbe's family who are learned, and then we have, you know, a couple generations later we have the Friedrich Rebbe starting Achas et Hamimim. So before we get to that, I'm curious, like, what happens in between? Like, do we see this tradition continuing to be passed down in the Hasidic movement? Does it ever become more widespread than just, like, the secretive, you know, mother-to-daughter tradition? Do we also see it passed down in other Hasidic communities outside Chabad? Because it seems from, you know, the memoirs that Rachel tells her daughter, this was a tradition amongst the Kabbalists in general, not specifically the Chabad movement. And do we see evidence of that in any other Hasidic community?
Okay. So the first thing is, in the time of the Alter Rebbe, there are stories, famous stories about his relationship with his daughter Freda, and how he would teach Freda Torah. And she would come into a kind of yechidus, and the Alter Rebbe would be teaching her. And so one of the stories is that her brother, Reb Dov Ber, was very eager to hear what she was being taught. So he hid in that room, in the curtains, behind his father. And so Freda comes in, and the father stands up, or whatever, and he is teaching her, and he's teaching her about the Big Day Kohuna, the clothes of the Kohanim, right? So sounds like a interesting feminine type subject to teach. The only thing is, the Alter Rebbe didn't explain what is the significance of the avnet, of the belt of the Kohanim. They had a very interesting belt. And so from his position in the curtains behind his father, Reb Dov Ber stretched out his own gartel and, like, waved it. And Freda saw this, and she immediately understood what he meant. And she said, "And Tata, what about the avnet, the belt?" And immediately the Alter Rebbe spun round and caught Reb Dov Ber and threw him out of the room and was, you know, he shouldn't trespass. This is her time. But it shows that there is this relationship of the Alter Rebbe teaching Freida, his daughter. Now, you asked, does this have any wider reverberations? Well, if we go a few generations later, I think it was the grandmother of Reb Mendel Futterfuss, he told me, Oliver Shalom, he told me that she would learn Geschribene Chassidus. She would learn Chassidus, which was like the handwritten Chassidus of the Rebbe Maharash, or the, you know, the Tzemach Tzedek, you know, the Chassidus, which wasn't printed, it was handwritten, or maybe of the Rashab. And if a man came into the room, she would put that under the table and take out a book like the Tzenarena, which was a popular book for women to read. And now, to be honest, the Tzenarena is itself a very interesting book. It was written by a Mekubel, and it's a pirush, it's a collection of midrashim and explanations of the Chumash. So it itself is a very interesting thing, and the fact that women were reading the Tzenarena is no small thing. But that, she knew, was a regular thing for women to learn, and the unusual thing of learning deep Chassidus, she would do that by herself and hide it if any man came into the room. He also told me that when the Rebbe Rashab said, it was presumably the Rebbe Rashab's Chassidus that she was reading, that when the Rebbe Rashab said a maimah, she would try to be there. And somehow, hidden from view, she would hear the maimah as well. Now, so that's Reb Mendel Futterfuss's, I think, his grandmother. Reb Shlomo Chaim Kesselman, who was the Mashpia, the Rosh Yeshiva in Kfar Chabad. So Reb Nachman Sudak, he told me when he was a bocha in the yeshiva, he would see Reb Shlomo Chaim's wife on a Shabbos afternoon sitting on a rocking chair on the veranda, the mipesa, reading Geschribene Chassidus herself, you know, reading this handwritten Chassidus, like the Chassidus of the Rebbe Rashab, and deep, deep Chassidus. And she would be sitting there, and, you know, the Bochrim would see him. You know, so it seems to be transmitted down in some way. So, you know, clearly there weren't schools. You know, it was, right. You know, how did they learn? How did they begin to learn? We don't know. Well, you also asked just now about outside Chabad. So yes. There's one anecdote which is very moving, I feel. It's about the Piasechna Rebbe. Now, the Piasechna Rebbe was in Warsaw in the time of the Warsaw Ghetto. He was in the Warsaw Ghetto and he died there. He's sometimes called the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto. But before the war, he was a Rebbe, Hasidic Rebbe. He would play the violin at a Hasidic Hisvadut. And he had a very close relationship with his wife. And at some point, unfortunately, something like 1935, maybe, his wife passed away, so before the war. And shortly after she passed away, all this is written by my friend Nehemiah Pollan in his book, Eish Kodesh, Holy Fire, which is about the Piasechna Rebbe. So sometime after she passed away, one of the Hasidim of the Piasechna Rebbe, the close Hasidim, was in the room with his Rebbe. And the Rebbe said, I want to show you something. And he showed him a manuscript, a piece of paper, on which the top half was written in one handwriting and the bottom half was written in another handwriting. So the chassid didn't know what it was. So the Piyas Hetchner Rebbe said to him, I was in the middle of writing a maimah, or whatever, Torah. And then I got called out to have a medical examination. So it was left on the table. And my wife came into the room and she saw what it was and she picked up a pen and she finished it. She wrote the rest of the maimah. And the Rebbe ended off, that's what it means, v'hoyu l'bosa echad, they should be one flesh.
But it obviously seems to be a thread here of like secrecy, meaning the way that we, like, it seems to be that this was part of the tradition amongst the Kabbalists, the Hasidim, but it's definitely not common. It's definitely select women, and there definitely seems to be this common thread of like the woman keeping it a secret, at least up until a certain point. Like, can you explain that? Like, why the secrecy?
This is adding substance to your question, but among the literature, there was also a phenomenon of a woman who knew a lot of Torah. She knew a lot of Talmud. Her name was Reina Basia. And she was connected with an atziv. She was part of the whole Soloveitchik family. And she had tremendous Torah knowledge, but she had absolutely no way to express it, to communicate it in any way. And in a sense, she was a very frustrated woman. You don't get that same sense of frustration in the Hasidic stories. Let's take her in this literature realm. You know, what would she want to do? Give a pilpul. And that, mitzad kol kvuda bas marech pnima, you know, it hadn't got to that yet. You know, the idea that there should be a women's group and women studying and a woman giving a pilpul of her own in front of other women, that hadn't yet hatched. Somehow, for the Hasidim, the idea of knowledge was there was a sort of a sense that knowledge had its own meaning. You didn't have to give a pilpul. By the fact that you knew it was already something and you understood it. So you're asking about the secrecy. It's all part of the, I would say, that same kol kvuda bas melech pnima, and the extent to which, as the times change. Now, there's an interesting comment that the Friedrich Rebbe gives in the memoirs, in the Yiddish version of the memoirs, in a footnote. At the back of the Yiddish memoirs, there are footnotes, and a lot of those footnotes are extremely interesting. One of the footnotes, he says that the great Chachomim of the age, through the ages, knew all kinds of sciences, botany, whatever it is. He gives a list of sciences that they knew. But they would only communicate their knowledge of this when the science of the surrounding age had caught up to that. And then they could speak about those things. So one might say that there is a concept of the empowerment and the significance of womanhood in Torah, and particularly expressed and emphasized in Kabbalah, which society as a whole was not yet ready to appreciate the idea of a woman on that and that public forum. And then when that starts changing in society as a whole, so that gives the Jewish woman, the Hasidic woman, the power that she is able to come out, as it were, and express this aspect of herself in a public way. Obviously, encouraged by the Rebbe. It's the Rebbeim who are bringing the woman into this public forum and giving them that empowerment that they are the ones who are changing the world and everything depends on the woman. In bringing Mashiach and so on. But it's so So exactly why, you know, it's at that particular moment in time. Maybe one could just understand it in terms of coming closer to the actual Iskalos of Mashiach. And it's up till that time before Malchus was hidden, was concealed. And then comes that, the Kol Kvud HaBas Melech Pnima. And then comes the moment of that revelation.
So let's talk a little bit about Ahos HaTemimim now. Can you tell us a little bit about, what was the goal of the movement? How many women were involved? What exactly did they learn? How often? What format? Like, what did this actually look like?
All right, I'll tell you what I know about it, which is little scraps. A lot of the material is in the Igros Kodesh of the Friedrich Rebbe. And it begins with a person called Mordechai Dubin. Now, Dubin was a person, a politician in Latvia, in Riga, and he was very much a sort of a central figure, and he had become very, very deeply involved with Chabad, and a big supporter of the Friedrich Rebbe, and in many ways. And his son was getting married. So his son had a kala, a Lubavitcher girl, because now there's a Lubavitch community in Riga. We're talking about the 1930s, 1936, 37. And what seems to have transpired is that he said to her, "Do you learn Hasidus?" She said, "No, I don't know any Hasidus." So he is like, you know, a little bit more a modern man kind of thing. You know, he's a politician. He must have been thinking, what are my son and her going to talk about if she doesn't know Chassidus? So he asks a big prominent rabbi who was there, Rav Mordechai Chaifetz. He asks Rabbi Chaifetz, "Will you teach my future daughter-in-law Chassidus?" So Rav Mordechai Chaifetz writes to the Friedrich Rebbe, who's in Otwock, in Poland. And the Friedrich Rebbe writes back an enthusiastic letter. "Yes, this is very important. You must teach her Chassidus, but not just her. Get a whole group of girls together. And you should know that the Rebbe Maharash said on Yud Kislev, a particular year, that for Gezer Chabad, there's no difference between a boy and a girl. Certainly she should learn Chassidus." You know, like a very, very strong letter. It's in the Igros Kodesh of the Friedrich Rebbe. And so, and the Friedrich Rebbe gives advice how they should learn. I think he says they should learn Tanya, but not necessarily Al Haseda. Learn easy parts first. And the girls should write down in their own language what it means. Like they should write little essays or summaries in their own language, whether that's Yiddish or Latvian, whatever it was. And the Friedrich Rebbe had a very strong kashorim with these girls. Now, one of the girls, now how many? There's a photograph in the book, which was written about Riga. You know, after the war, there were many books put together commemorating various communities. So there's one made about Riga. And it has in it a photo of the Achos HaTemimim. And together with them in the photo is, I think, Rav Mordechai Chaifetz and possibly Itcher the Masmid, who is also from Riga. Both of them died in the Shoah. Unfortunately, most of the girls probably died in the Shoah. So there's a picture, and the picture was reprinted in one of the Neshei Chabad publications some years back, with like indications of the names of the different people who they'd managed to identify, which was, I think, the first. It was first printed in Yiddish Haim, maybe, that picture again, with a sicha that the Friedrich Rebbe said when he met them, when he met the girls, because when the Friedrich Rebbe was leaving Europe in 1940, Baruch Hashem, he spent some time in Riga, and the girls of Ach Satmimim asked to see him in Yechidus. And so there was this Yechidus, and he spoke, he said a sicha, and that sicha was printed in Yiddish Ahem. And then, also, independent of that, there was a girl called Chaya Sima Mikhailova, who was in this group. And in fact, in the picture that they printed in the Neshei Chabad something publication, it shows her name, you know, so you can tell who is Chaya Sima Mikhailova. She wrote to the Friedrich Rebbe, what should I do about Reikus Hamaisim, the emptiness of action? So the Friedrich Rebbe wrote back a fascinating letter, which if that letter would have been sent to the biggest chassid you could imagine, you would think that's an amazing letter. And it's a base, and actually it's being sent to this young girl, she's probably 19 or 20 maybe at that time. And he is giving her a kind of path in his boneness in a very interesting way, the way that you take a concept from a posuk maybe, and you go to the, every concept has got in it, machshava dibru maise, you go to the level of machshava, and in that level of machshava, there's also machshava dibru maise, and you go to machshava of machshava, and then you go even higher to machshava of machshava of machshava. And it's as if you reach the elokus, which is in the concept. And he's teaching her how to do this, and he said, you can practice doing this so that you can do it very quickly. You can appreciate things in this deep, deep way. Absolutely amazing text. So that's a letter which he sent to one of the girls in Ach HaSatmimim, which is printed in the Igros Kodesh. There is another letter which I heard about, which was told to me by Rabbi Bakan, Olav Shalom, who was the rabbi in Riga, in this is around 1991, or maybe a couple of years later, I was in Riga, there was a conference there, and Rabbi Bakan was there, and he told me he had seen a letter 17 pages long, sent by the Friedrich Rebbe to one of the girls of Ach HaSatmimim. So there was this tremendous going backwards and forwards between the Friedrich Rebbe communicating with these young women. How many there were? In the picture, it's not like, there's maybe 25, 30, something like that. And they're in two groups. There's the younger and the older, and a girl, when they met the Friedrich Rebbe, a girl from each of the groups said like a sicha or something in front of the Rebbe. And it seems from his letters that the Friedrich Rebbe would have liked this to take off on a much wider level. But as it was, it began in Riga. Then, around 1938, Reb Mordechai Chaifetz, who was deeply involved in it, in Riga, was visiting New York. And he was giving a verbrengen in Rabbi Simpson's shul. So somewhere in Brooklyn. So he's giving a verbrengen in Rabbi Simpson's shul, and there's a table with men, and they're saying l'chaim, and Rabbi Chaifetz is giving a whole thing. And suddenly he notices that there's the curtain over the Weibershul, and he notices that there's someone there overhearing the verbrengen. So he walks over, and he sees there's two girls, 16, 17, something like that. And it is Rabbi Simpson's daughters. And he said, do you want to learn Hasidus? They said, Avada, certainly. And he said, well, in that case, write to the Friedrich Rebbe, write to the Rebbe in Otvot, and say that you want to begin a chapter or section of Ach HaSatmimim here in Brooklyn. And so that's what they did. And they there's a letter in English to them from the Friedlander Rebbe, who presumably it's written by our Rebbe. So it's written to them and saying, that's in the also in the Igros Chodesh of the Friedlander Rebbe, and saying how to set up this group. Rabbi Yochanan Gordon was very closely involved in it, and I think one of these, if I haven't got it wrong exactly who was who, one of the Simpson girls married a Gordon, and another one married a Feldman, something like that. So one of these two girls I managed to speak to, Baruch Hashem, by phone, promoted by Rabbi Mendy Gordon, Zonatagazon, here in London, and speaking to his aunt. And it was a fascinating discussion. She told me this whole story of the Verbrengen, and do you want to learn Hasidus, and saying Avada. So that's how Achaz HaTmimim began in New York. So what happened, she described it to me. She said it was really exciting. They would go, she and her sister, her older sister, they would go in the subway, and they would come to, I think it was Rabbi Yochanan Gordon's house, maybe. That's where they had it. And Rabbi Yochanan Gordon would teach them Tanya, and it was a fantastic thing, and it was so exciting, and it was so empowering, and it was so beautiful. You know, like she really loved it. So that then fed into the Beis Rivka school. You see, at a certain point, Beis Rivka began in New York, and girls from Chabad families previously had gone to Beis Yaakov or some other from girls' school. And now there's Beis Rivka has begun. And then, so once Beis Rivka was running, the Achaz HaTmimim concept fed into the Beis Rivka. So girls went to Beis Rivka, and gradually the syllabus, the curriculum, became more and more and more involved with Hasidus. As I understand it, you might know more than me about it, but in Tavshin Lamed Ches, when the Rebbe had a heart attack, so many women took on, or girls took on, they're going to learn Chitas Tanya, or Chitas altogether. The whole idea of girls saying Chitas, not only boys saying Chitas, but girls saying Chitas. And then more and more learning Mamorim, Sichas, Mamorim. Even in earlier, when we go back to Riga and the 30s, the 1930s, when the Friedrich Rebbe was not fought, then you have Likutei Diburim being published in little Chovrois, like Sichas come out, you know, the same kind of thing. And the Friedrich Rebbe said, I am writing them in Yiddish, many of them, not all, but so that girls and women will be able to read them. And so he was providing material for girls to study.
So the primary thing that they're studying is Hasidus, right? At a Hasidus.
Yeah.
Yes. We don't see them studying halacha, gemara, or anything else like that.
No. My understanding that Achaz HaTmimim was Hasidus. Yeah.
Was Hasidus. Okay.
Yeah, he then, in the yechidus that the Friedrich Rebbe had with the Achaz HaTmimim in Riga in 1940, he said, you should learn halacha because loy amo oretz chasid. In other words, you're learning Hasidus, but you've also got to learn halacha. You shouldn't be an Amma Oretz. He also told them that since you know more than your mothers and your teachers, your lady teachers, you've got to be respectful to them. don't be disrespectful just because you know more.
Right. So just the last thing I want to talk about is, you know, schools in modern day America. And sort of the influences that, you know, the history of Torah study in the Hasidic community influences, you know, the modern day curriculum. You know, I think most Chabad schools today, some schools have a little bit of Gemara, but there's not much serious Gemara learning going on. I think also the study of Hasidus, which most schools incorporate, I think having more like a rigorous text-based study of Hasidus is more recent. I know for sure the generation before me, I went to school, I studied Hasidus from the text, but I know the generation prior didn't do so much of that. I guess I'm curious to understand like what the evolution of girls' education was, and sort of how it was influenced by, the history of women's learning.
Well, I think the evolution, it revolves around the Rebbe. The fact of girls coming to the Verbrengens and hearing the Maimer and the Sichas and then the Hanochas of everything being made available, and girls will be learning that, and then printing this, printing that, comes out of Muga Maimer, so of course everyone would rush to learn it. And so gradually the intensification in terms of learning Hasidus and feeling that this is something central that a girl should know, so that becomes a key element in a Hasidic chinuch in a Chabad school. But then you have the comments that the Rebbe made a few times about girls learning Gemara, about learning Ein Yaakov, and a whole discussion. But the idea that the door should be open, that girls should be able to learn Gemara and have the tools to learn Gemara, I think that's an important thing. From the point of view of the Rambam, the shakla v'taria in the Gemara, that means the back and forth discussion, this and that and the other, which often is not according to the halacha anyway, he regarded that as very secondary. The main thing is the halacha, and he also spoke about the importance of the agadah. In his introduction to his Piddush on the Mishnayos, the very end of that, which is printed in every big set of Gemara, and in Zroim, in Brachas, the beginning of the Gemara, and it's been translated otherwise into English. He wrote it in Arabic, Judeo-Arabic. He writes there about the importance of the Agadata. So there's the Agadata on the one hand, the Halacha on another. So the Arizal or the Mekubalim said, "Roiv," and it's quoted in Tanya, "Roiv sodas haTorah genuzimba." Most secrets of Torah are hidden in the Agadata. So therefore, the Alter Rebbe in Tanya in Igeres HaKodesh recommends that in every shul between Mincha and Maira they should learn Ein Yaakov, because that's like the mystical dimension of the Gemara, and then of course people learn Halacha. So that aspect of learning the actual story, which is there in the Ein Yaakov, in the Gemara, is a very beautiful thing and very relevant to girls. And it's a matter of fitting it in the timetable. That's I think it's very enriching for girls, and very meaningful, the concepts that they're familiar with, and then they see where it is in the actual Gemara and how it's there in the Gemara. That's a very meaningful thing.
Right. Well, the Rebbe did seem, my understanding of the Sicha from Tevshan Nun, where the Rebbe talks about this, the Rebbe did seem to also push for women who want to also be involved in studying the Shakla Vataria behind the Halacha, also those areas of Gemara.
You study the Shakla, the more you understand the halachic process. So that's the other side of it. You see, Amumius, you learn, you do maths, you do, you learn plenty of, logical acrobatics in school, assuming that you are having a secular education. Okay, they're girls who are Ole Torah. But assuming that one is following the regular region's curriculum, so you're learning a lot of secular stuff. And so by studying the Shakla Vataria in this more subtle way, that's certainly very rich.
Yeah. Right, yeah, certainly. So one last question is, looking at other Hasidic communities, in the modern age, do we see any, hint of this, direction of the history of Kabbalah and Hasidus being more inclined towards educating women? Maybe it doesn't seem to be that in other Hasidic communities outside Chabad, there's more of an emphasis on educating girls than in the broader from world. Can you explain the reason for that? Is it because, you know, the Rebbeim and the more recent generations didn't push it as much for whatever reason? What's the reason for that divergence?
Well, as you probably know, just as much as there, or not just as much, but to a certain extent, parallel to the way there is Chabad outreach with mitzvah tanks and with campus shluchim, there's also inreach, if you like, into Heimische from Hasidic communities. So here in London, for example, the Chabad Center is in the middle of a very frum community of Vizhnitz, Satmar, Belz, etc., Bobov, and their strong attempts, quite successful, to get people involved in learning Hasidus. But as far as I have seen here in London, and then there's parallel things in Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, Bnei Brak, they have koilelim for learning Hasidus that are run for from Hasidic Yidden. But all of that I have seen so far involves men. I haven't seen anything to do with women. So Reb Levi Pariz, Oliver Sholem, unfortunately passed away just recently. So he told over a discussion he had with a chassid from another group, whatever. And this chassid said to him, why do your women learn Hasidus? So Reb Levi said, tell me, your grandmother, you remember your grandmother? Yeah. Did she have anything to do with organizing anything? No, she sat there saying tilling. Right. Your mother, did she have anything to do with organizing things? Oh, yeah, to a great extent. And your wife, does she have, she runs everything. So Avada, she has to learn Hasidus. So the empowerment of women in the modern world, which extends into the Hasidic community by some kind of osmosis, if the woman is empowered, then she has to learn Hasidus.